think I was just kind of depressed. You know, the cold weather, I'm on a diet, and the stock market was going up counter to my anticipation. So now I'm back. Thank you very much for your emails and your letters of support. Man. Money Machine. Show 153. It's April. Yes, indeed, it's April. I went for a walk in the sunshine today, and I'm in a really good mood, so I wanted to hop down into the basement and put together show 153 of an all-new Mad Money Machine, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about Rubini lashes out at Jim Cramer. We'll talk about one world currency, a new Vanguard exchange-traded fund, and if buy and hold doesn't work, what do we do? Machine continues to be brought to you by Index Funds Advisors, the good folks at Index Funds Advisors, whom I haven't done a video for them in, it's been over a month, it's been about 5 weeks since I've sat down at my stupid computer to put together another video to one of their quotes of the week. And I don't know, maybe it is because I'm had the doldrums, you know, winter. Maybe I'm one of these people who has this seasonal affective disorder. Have you heard of that? Sad, where if you don't get enough light, then you get kind of depressed. And maybe I should, you know, in the between the months of September to April or March, move to Australia and have summer and spring all year round. Wouldn't that be the life? But who would take care of our hamster? Well, let's see. Rubini lashes out at Cramer. This one's in the news. Bring up the website here. This from the Associated Press. Just weeks after The Daily Show host Jon Stewart took Cramer to task for trying to turn finance reporting into a game, famous bear economist Nouriel Roubini criticized Cramer on Tuesday for predicting bull markets. "Cramer is a buffoon," said Roubini, a New York University economics professor often called Dr. Doom. "He was one of those who called six times in a row for this bear market rally to be a bull market rally, and he got it wrong. And after all this mess and Jon Stewart, he should just shut up because he has no shame." Cramer recently wrote in a blog that Roubini is intoxicated with his own prescience and vision, and said Roubini should realize that things are better since the stock market's recent bottom in early March. The Standard & Poor's 500 indexes rallied about 17% since then, or maybe even more than that by now. Roubini said in 2006 that the worst recession in four decades was on its way. And he has attracted attention for his gloomy and accurate predictions of the U.S. financial market meltdown. With the amount of, you know, okay, that's enough of reading the article. With the amount of people out there making predictions all over the spectrum, I think you've got to figure that somebody's going to be right about some prediction somewhere along the way. And we need to turn our cameras on that person, don't we? Once we find the person that made the right prediction, we need to focus our attention on that person because they must have the inside knowledge, the secret key to understanding the entire economy that none of us can fathom. Just like the guy that won twice in a row on the roulette wheel, I bet. No, I think Dr. Doom, by continuing to be bearish, he's kind of making the wrong decision there. He needs to turn massively bullish at this point to really get the attention. Because if he's wrong, then yeah, okay, he's wrong. But if he's right, Oh my goodness, what a genius he'll look like if he gets the call right both times. He's got everything to gain and not a whole lot to lose by switching his call at this exact moment and turning into a roaring bull on the economy. And wouldn't it be great if he's right? But myself, I don't know. I think there's a lot of bad news ahead, judging by what the reporters are saying about commercial real estate. Still has a lot of downside. Alt-A mortgages are still in front of us, the foreclosure of all of those. Earnings season, I guess a lot of companies are reporting better than expected earnings. And we know that it's impossible to forge financial earnings reports. The stimulus package hasn't really kicked in yet, but what if the stimulus package doesn't quite work? What are they going to do? So there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, still in these markets. There's downside, there's upside. We've had a lot of upside from the bottom, and it's painful if you missed it. But where do we go from here? Is it another 20% leg up in a month? Or is it another 20% leg down in a month? And does it matter? You know, I tried to do a calculation that said, does it matter if you do dollar cost averaging after 10, 20, 30 years? Let's say that in that first year, you missed 5% because you didn't average into the market. In other words, you thought the market might go down at some point throughout this year, but you decided to just go ahead and invest all your money now and forget about a possible 5% retracement sometime later in the year. Does that really make a difference after 10, 20, 30 years? And according to my calculations, yeah, unfortunately it does make a difference. It made a big difference. After the longer the period of time, of course, if you put $100,000 to work all at once, then the swing of the differential in the end, assuming it was completely invested, assuming 8% a year and all this sort of stuff, these games that we play, it made a pretty big difference in the number at the end. So I welcome any further analysis that you might be aware of on dollar cost averaging. To me, dollar cost averaging, though, is how is it much different than market timing? Yeah. And of course, if you were to put it all at one, put all your money to work at once, how is that different than market timing? You know, it's just like you've just got to hold your nose and dive into the pool when you're ready with the money. If you've got the money to invest, then invest it. According to what? How do you know what to invest it in? Your risk capacity. Of course. How much risk are you comfortable with taking? How much risk should you be taking with your money? That's the only bottom line here. So is buy and hold dead? And if it is, what should we do? Saw an article in the Wall Street Journal saying buy and hold's dead. These people that were buy and holders, they're getting out of buy and hold. They're going back into trading the markets. And one guy had 5% gain versus the market since he started trading the market. Wow, that's great. Now let's see you continue to make those decisions throughout the course of 10, 20, and 30 years. Your full-time job is now a trader. Whereas you could have been spending that time looking at stock charts and listening to conference calls, going out and making money with a job. Start a podcast. Get someone to sponsor your podcast, to advertise on your podcast, you know. I don't know. I know John Bogle in that article said it's a folly to think that you can become an active trader, a market timer, because you not only have to be right when to buy, you have to be right again then when to sell. You have to be right twice in your decision if you're trying to time the market. And not only that, versus buy and hold, I'd say you'd have to be right many, many times over the course of 10, 20, 30 years if you're really trying to trade your net worth, trade your nest egg, trade your retirement savings, trade your financial freedom savings. It's scary to me to think that someone would actually be trading their entire retirement savings trying to beat the market. Now, one thing I can tell you, though, is if you can't take the risk, then don't take the risk. If it helps you sleep at night, that's often the metric that people use is, do my investments allow me to sleep at night? And that's actually something that I need to start thinking about again, because as I mentioned, I know you hate hearing this, but like a year ago when I sold all my stocks, I was able to sleep better at night because I knew I didn't have to worry about equities at that point. But now with the market having gone up, you know, we never talk about the market in future tense, continuation of past trends, but with the market having gone up 20% from the bottom in March, I'm wondering, should I be back in the market? Would I be able to sleep better at night if I were some small degree invested in equities? And yes, I am now considering putting together my portfolio, and I've got a new name for it, which I'll unveil right now. You know, a year or so ago, I put together something called the Smiler Portfolio. Smiler Portfolio. And this is the asset allocation mix that is very similar to what IFA does for its equities. Okay, the Smiler Portfolio didn't include any fixed income, any bonds, or any government treasuries. The Smiler was just all the equity portion. And it's an acronym that stands for small cap, micro cap, international, large cap, emerging market, and REITs, Smiler. Well, now I have a new one, and it adds one component, and it's called the Simpler Portfolio. Simpler, ironically, is not simpler than Smiler, but there you have it. S-I-M-P-L-E-R, small cap, international, micro cap. P, and this is contrary to IFA, but P for a little bit of precious metals. L, large cap, emerging markets, and REITs, simpler. Yeah, I think it's okay to hold, not as an investment, but as an insurance policy, some precious metals. I know the Harry Brown portfolio, the permanent portfolio, is 1/4 in gold. I don't think I could go that far. Gosh, unless I was absolutely 100% knew that inflation or hyperinflation was on the way. And of course, if I was absolutely 100% knew that hyperinflation was on the way, then why wouldn't I be 100% in gold? Although, you know, I was listening to another podcast. I try to get a diversity of opinion from the ticker guy. Brian Denninger. He has a podcast. He has a website where he gets into the gory details, the sausage making of the banking and financial industry. And he said he wouldn't, if he thought inflation was really coming, which he doesn't, by the way, he thinks it's deflation. But if he did, if he thought we were in for inflationary times, instead of investing in gold, he thinks that stocks would go up similarly to the drop in the dollar, you know. So therefore, he would buy calls on the S&P 500 index. He would leverage his bet into inflation by buying a little bit of calls in the S&P and long-dated calls, leaps almost, far-dated calls, way out of the money in the S&P 500 index. And I thought that was an interesting strategy. You know, maybe actually take a little bit of your mad money and waste it on that strategy and just as an insurance policy. That, after all, that's what calls and puts basically are, is insurance against rises or drops in the market. So is buy and hold dead? I don't think so, but I think it is if you can't stand the risk that you're taking. That's the difference. If you're in an investment and you can no longer take the risk, then you have to sell. or you have to buy. In my case, I'm no longer able to take the risk that I'm not in equities. So I'm thinking about starting buying, and now I come full circle to where I was going with this simpler portfolio. The components of it that I would buy, the emerging markets, I'm really interested in looking at the FXI, which is the China index fund, and EWZ, which is the Brazil index fund. These two countries being in different currencies, and I believe, I haven't done the fact checking on this, but I believe these funds are denominated in their local currencies. So you're buying stocks denominated in yuan or renminbi or the Brazilian real. Okay, so if there is a problem with the dollar against other currencies, especially these currencies, because I don't think that they're on board with this devaluing of their own currency. I could be wrong about that, but that's why you don't bet on any one thing. You bet on a lot of different things. So that would be the E component of my simpler portfolio. The P, I might just buy some GTU, the gold fund from Canada, or of course GLD, and maybe SLV, the silver, for that component, along with, hey, get on eBay and try to buy some of those coins using the live cashback technique. And speaking of gold and the notion of one world currency, you know, we were hearing a lot more now about the G20 and how they were talking about going to a one world currency, a single currency. They haven't, I guess Russia has said we need to have the reserve currency of the world be a basket of currencies. And China's making noises about making the dollar no longer the reserve currency of the world, you know, making these kinds of threats. And there's an article at MSNBC entitled, "What If the World All Used the Same Currency?" The article talks about this notion, what if we did use the same currency. It says, currencies are valued based on trade flows. If the Japanese yen is relatively weak compared to the dollar, and American car buyers can buy a higher-end Japanese model for the same price in dollars, they will choose the Japanese car. That means the currencies that are more productive generally see the value of their currency strengthen, which gives people who earn wages in that currency more buying power when they buy products priced in other weaker currencies. And there are other problems with the unified currency, as currencies in the Eurozone are learning. Though the first 10 years of sharing a single currency went relatively smoothly, cracks have begun appearing in the continent as the global recession deepens. One of the original goals of the euro was to raise the overall productivity of the European economy, as weaker, smaller countries had to become more competitive with larger, stronger countries. In fact, the reverse is true. Weaker countries enjoyed higher purchasing power without having to produce more goods and services. Overall productivity growth slowed in Europe from 1.6% a year before the euro to half that pace since. Well, I don't know. I don't even know that this article gets into what's really important to talk about. And that is, should the government be in control of a currency? In the Constitution, it says our government should be in control of the currency, and that currency should be based on gold. So that limits their control. I like the idea that we'd standardize on one currency instead of each individual state in the United States having their own currency. You know, it makes it really a really painful experience, unless you've got a computer at every possible terminal to be able to do the conversion for you from Virginia dollars to Maryland dollars when you travel across the border. I like the idea that we standardize on one currency in the United States. That's provided for in the Constitution. But I also like the idea that government really is not in control of that currency either. It's based on gold, a precious metal that's portable, that's somewhat malleable, that's divisible, that holds its value over a long time, and that's not easily forged or even increased in number. So I like the idea of a one-world currency. Again, as long as it's based on gold. Well, there's a video now available on Google Video, the one I've talked about a long time ago, IOUSA. The movie, the entire movie, about an hour and 20 minutes long, is available at Google Video. You can either search for it, or I'll have a link in the show notes directly where you can watch that. So the new Vanguard exchange-traded fund is now available. It's the Vanguard FTSE All World XUS Small Cap Exchange-Traded Fund. All right, so we talked about the simpler portfolio. Simple, small cap, I, international. So, hey, wouldn't it be great to have a little combination of those two? Small cap, international. And that's what this Vanguard Exchange-Traded Fund would get you, is exposure to small cap international funds. It just came available on the market exchanges a few days ago. It's worth looking into if you're looking to get into a simpler portfolio. Join me now as we go to rehab.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no.
The Madman Machine and the rehab segment are brought to you by the good folks at Index Funds Advisors, from whom I lift this material. We've talked about what it means to be an active investor, and we've talked about a higher power, the Nobel laureates who study the markets and tell us that the best way to be in the market is to invest in the market. Well, if you're an active investor, you need rehabilitation. There is a 12-step program to turn you from an active investor into a passive investor in which you can invest and relax. And step three in the rehab program is stock pickers. A lot of active traders think that they're beating the market when they're actually not. Here's some things you need to think about. Number one, make sure you're talking about your entire portfolio for the exact period of time when you're comparing your trades versus the market. Number two, confirm proper accounting of the returns, including cash flows in and out of the account. All right. Number three, consider state and federal taxes paid on short and long-term capital gains when you are comparing the buy and hold strategy, comparing the active trading strategy versus the buy and hold passive investing strategy. Because if you have to pay taxes on all that stuff, man, that is a massive hit on what you're trying to do. Number four, consider all fees when you're assessing your net return as an active investor. Remember, there's commissions a lot of times, and they're not insignificant if you do it a lot. Most funds report gross performance before deduction of fees and commissions. Number five, adjust for the portfolio's exposure to market risk, size risk, and value risk factors. So here's the thing. If you're an active investor and you decide one day, you know what? I think Brazil is going to be really hot. I'm going to put everything in Brazil. And you make 10%. All right. And the S&P made 7%. Well, exactly, though, what was your risk that you took to get that extra 3% versus the risk that would have been in the S&P? You know, when things go good, well, they might go good. When they go bad, they could really go bad and very quickly. So you need to know your capacity for risk and stay within that capacity. Number six, consider the level of diversification of the portfolios that you're comparing. If you say Jim Cramer says it takes 5 stocks to be diversified, compare that to 15,000 stocks that you can be diversified with. Number seven, analyze the standard deviations or volatility measurements. That's one way to gauge risk. Is how widely does the portfolio swing up and down in valuation over time. Number 8, consider if the over and under performance is within the bounds of what would be expected randomly. In other words, you think you're doing such a hot job picking stocks, but isn't it just random? Number 9, be sure to compare results to an appropriate benchmark. You know, if you're investing in emerging market stocks, compare it to an emerging market benchmark. One of the things I remember is that Berkshire Hathaway stock has about the same risk to return ratio as an emerging market index fund. If you're looking at a group of stock pickers, be sure to include the returns of those pickers that did not survive the duration of the period, usually due to significant losses. And this is where we get into survivorship bias. You know, if you look at the average of mutual funds over the past 10 years, if you look at all funds, well, you're probably not including the ones that dropped out after the first 5 years because they were such big losers. You're looking at only the winners after the 10-year period. And even then, they don't beat the indexes, so it's pretty bad. Number 11, look at all active managers in an asset class, both those who stayed in business and those who did not. Similar to a number 10 there. And finally, number 12, check to make sure the stock-picking manager did not drift in designated style during the period in question. You know, you're trying to evaluate the risk-reward of a particular investment. Maybe they started out in small cap, and maybe they switched to emerging markets at the end of the period, which makes it difficult to compare to any one particular benchmark. Making these comparisons requires a high degree of understanding of each of the concepts listed above. To simplify your analysis, you may consider that the only way to end up with a different performance than the index is to own investments different than the index. Since an index is the only source of long-term risk and return data, why would any investor choose something other than the index? The only question should be, what mix of indexes is appropriate for you? That's step 3 in active investor rehab. Brought to you by Index Funds Advisor. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. If you haven't done so, take their risk capacity survey. If you haven't done so in a while, take their risk capacity survey there. It will guide you. You can take the short one, 5 questions. You can take the more thorough one, 25 questions. You can take the one specific to a 401k plan. And it will guide you towards one of their 20 portfolios that matches your risk capacity to a risk tolerance, a risk exposure. So when I said the all-new Mad Money Machine, can you guess what's new about it? Well, so far I haven't talked a whole lot about non-investing stuff on the show. And, you know, on the last episode, wink, wink, the one that was called Last Episode, I talked about how some of the things I might want to talk about might not be pleasing to my sponsor. You know, all this stuff about how the government is not doing us right. That's just politically incorrect to talk about how bad the government is, right? Nobody wants to advertise on a show that you're criticizing our own government. This is un-American. Well, so mixing in fun stuff, talking about the problems of the politics and the government, I think I've come up with a solution, and I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. What I'm going to do, and you'll see this next week, maybe on Thursday of next week if I can do it, or maybe the following week, whenever I get it started, I am going to introduce a brand new podcast into this same stream, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's not going to have any advertisers. It's just going to be me talking about the fun stuff and no investing talk allowed. Unless it's pure anti-government talk, I guess. I don't hate the government. I just don't like the control of the citizenry that they're taking us in the direction right now, and have been for the last 80 years, I guess, that I'm only starting to wake up and realize. So I'm going to be talking about that and fun stuff, and dieting plans, and exercise, and Xbox games, and movies, and books, and all the good stuff in life on the new show that you'll find right in this stream, and I'm going to call it Planet Boyer. What else would I possibly call it than Planet Boyer? You'll get it automatically if you stay subscribed to this stream. I'm going to just keep it on the Mad Money Machine site. I will have eventually a new website called planetboyer.com where I might have some blog postings and fun things out there. I do have a Twitter account now, twitter.com/planetboyer. And so we'll see how it goes. Let me know if it works for you or not after we, you know, after we try it a few times. One of the bad things about it, I guess, will be is that it, by having two shows a week, if I get up to that point, you will, if you miss a few episodes, it'll lock you out of iTunes really quickly. You know, right now with one show a week, if you miss five shows in a row and you don't listen to them, then iTunes just stops. And it doesn't, it gives you that little exclamation point and says, I'm not going to download anymore because you haven't been listening to these shows. Well, now with two shows a week, it'll only take you 2.5 weeks to get me locked out of your iPod. So don't go on vacation. If you see the exclamation point beside the Mad Money Machine, start listening to the one of the shows at least so that it will continue downloading five more episodes onto your iPod. And when you get some time, you can listen to them. So I look forward to coming to you in the Planet Boyer show sometime next week, I'm hoping. I want to thank you. I want to thank all of you who sent me emails. I want to thank you who posted at drop.io/madmoneymachine. Got some voicemails. I know a number of you said, you know, you don't usually email people, but you thought it was really important to send me an email saying, giving me encouragement. And it worked. I actually, you know, if I hadn't got a single email, I probably would have said, well, that's it. Nobody is actually listening to the show. And been really depressed about the whole thing. But I'm the opposite of depressed. I'm encouraged. I thank you for the encouragement. It worked. It helped me. I understand that there are folks that are listening to the show, and I understand, you know, I'm not just some goofball shouting into the internet. I'm actually helping people, and it's a great feeling. It's a great, great feeling to know that I can make a contribution to society, and this is my way of doing it. Thanks very much. I will see you next week. Look for me before Friday on Planet Boyer, and I'll see you next Friday right here on the Mad Money Machine. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes your encouragement to make a Mad Money Machine. Please visit IFA.com, the folks that bring you this show, Index Funds Advisors. Helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Good luck, everybody.
Please hang up and try again.